Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. As we tape here, Jim, President Obama has just wrapped up his speech at the United Nations, and as most people can guess, it's not the first martini. But the first one is related to it, and that's the president's schedule as he goes up to New York, spent part of the day up there yesterday, referred to himself as eye candy as he had time to appear with his wife on The View, but no time to meet with other foreign leaders. Of course, this has been brewing over the last couple of weeks after Benjamin Netanyahu was frustrated about this, and now it turns out he's not meeting with him. He's not meeting with the new Egyptian president. He's not really meeting with any other world leaders, but he did have time for The View. Here's Jake Tapper, senior White House correspondent for ABC News, who was actually on Fox last night talking with Greta Van Susteren, and his surprise at how this does not follow typical protocol.
But it is true that last year when President Obama was here for the UN General Assembly, he had at least a dozen meetings with world leaders, and having covered President Obama since he took office, this is an anomaly, this idea that he would come here and not have meetings with world leaders. There really isn't a full explanation that's been forthcoming other than the president has a busy schedule.
And so the reason this is a good martini is because the mainstream media, Jim, give them credit, they're all over this. Dana Milbank, hardly anything other than a pretty leftist columnist, says this is a scandal that Obama would spend time on The View and do all these other powder puff interviews but not meet with world leaders. The Weekly Standard had a great quote from an unnamed campaign aide from the Obama campaign that said, well, if he met with one world leader, he'd have to meet with 10. And of course, Hillary Clinton's meeting with 60 over the next few days. So good that this is getting a lot of play, and we'll see if it has any impact on what people think of his performance as president.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that kind of jumps out at this is not the first time the mainstream media, or what we would consider to be mainstream media, we might consider to be serious mainstream media, have gotten on Obama's case about not doing press availabilities to what you and I might call real reporters, but doing interviews with Entertainment Tonight, People, the pimp with the limp radio host down in Miami, you know, fluff interviews and not answering serious questions. Now you've got something that is kind of traditionally seen as part of the president's job description and duties. You know, UN week, it always comes in towards the end of September. All the world leaders get together in one place. You could argue that these are a bunch of photo ops or a bunch of fairly routine meetings, but and the president did find time to address the organization. I guess we should be good for that. He didn't just decide to pop in on Howard Stern or Don Imus. Actually, he wouldn't do either of them. Imus and Stern are pretty skeptical of President Obama. As we all know, he doesn't do hostile audiences the way Romney did the Clinton Global Initiative this morning. One of the things that's kind of fascinating about this is that Obama gets grief for this periodically, and the White House scheduler does not change their habits. They really put him in these circumstances. He, you know, he does interviews with, you know, morning DJ style, you know, radio talk show hosts. And, you know, you could argue, maybe you look at the ratings for the news, you look at the ratings for something like The View, maybe a lot of Americans, it's really important to see a president getting along well with Whoopi Goldberg and Joy Behar and Barbara Wawa, instead of getting along with other world leaders at the UN. You know, the New York Times has a great article today looking at how Obama's lack of personal relationships with leaders in the Middle East has kind of hampered our diplomatic and geopolitical efforts out there. This is not encouraging. What is encouraging is the mainstream media is you know, starting to report on this and starting to grouse about it publicly. Now, the real question is, when do we see that kind of get reflected in the coverage and suggestion this is not a serious president?
As we alluded to at the outset, the president's speech to the UN, not necessarily his worst speech ever, but as former U.S. Ambassador to the UN John Bolton mentioned on Fox when it was over, this is Obama trying to be all things to all people like he usually does at moments like this. But there are a couple of things that certainly stood out here. We're going to play a couple of clips here. First of all, now that this obscure online video has been pretty much debunked as being the actual inspiration for the attacks in Benghazi, Cairo, and half a dozen other Islamic countries, if not more, around the world, apparently, once again, President Obama is the only one who didn't get the memo.
That is what we saw play out in the last 2 weeks, as a crude and disgusting video sparked outrage throughout the Muslim world. Now, I have made it clear that the United States government had nothing to do with this video, and I believe its message must be rejected by all who respect our common humanity. It is an insult not only to Muslims, but to America as well. We understand why people take offense to this video, because millions of our citizens are among them.
And then, of course, he went on to explain how it wasn't enough to justify the type of violence, but when it's already been debunked, Jim, and he pretty much should have ignored the video and said, no matter what your excuse or justification is, this is not acceptable. And then here's another clip from later on where he's talking about who the future of the world does not belong to, which I think will raise a few eyebrows.
The future must not belong to those who slander the prophet of Islam. But to be credible, those who condemn that slander must also condemn the hate we see in the images of Jesus Christ that are desecrated, or churches that are destroyed, or the Holocaust that is denied.
Jim, I don't know if you've noticed the difference, but when Christians or Jews are mocked, there's usually not violent, fiery, murderous protests throughout the streets of the countries where there's a majority population of those faiths.
I wonder if it is, he'll mention that to his Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, who attended the Broadway performance of The Book of Mormon, the musical that mocks the Mormon faith, and gave a standing ovation. A couple of things here. First is, I actually thought at least the beginning of Obama's speech was pretty darn good. Now, while it was going on, I was watching my Twitter feed, and a lot of conservatives thought it was, you know, more of the same and terrible. I actually thought at the beginning he did a decent job of trying to articulate the principles of the First Amendment and saying, look, it's not the job of the government to come in and stop somebody from criticizing or saying something you find offensive. You know, the job of the government, if the answer to bad speech is more speech. I thought it was actually a pretty good thing. But then he goes and into this other thing. You play the quote that I think is going to really resonate from this. It is very surprising to see an American president saying before a world audience, the future does not belong to those who slander the prophet of Islam. Now, naturally, he goes on and says, don't slander Christianity, don't slander Jews, don't say the Holocaust, yada, yada. First of all, I love this passive voice, the future must not belong to. But one, what does that mean? You know, does it mean they won't be around in the future? That they'll somehow be eliminated between now and then? That they'll have had their minds changed? That they'll be marginalized? That they'll be irrelevant to public discussions? What does that mean? It's most of this is blather. However, that statement in that one sentence, the future must not belong to those who slander the prophet of Islam, I'm really wondering how that's going to play in the Muslim world, because we all know that the press in the Muslim world is, you think we have problems with the press in this country, Greg? They don't have anything resembling objectivity or our notions of fairness or anything like that. I mean, that may be interpreted as Obama coming to the aid of Islam. And you always think, oh, that's good news, they'll like us. Or it might be seen as Obama saying blasphemy has no place in this world. That's not the message I want an American president sending, and I think it could have real consequences if the erroneous impression is sent out that Obama is endorsing blasphemy laws. This was a strangely worded speech because he clearly was trying to reach to the Kumbaya Cairo speech of a couple of years ago, but he's also trying to react to what is a pretty top-to-bottom bad situation in the Middle East. And Obama has always been dogged, no pun intended, by this perception that he's a Muslim because his middle name is Hussein, and he grew up in Indonesia, and his dad took him to a Muslim school, and he went to mosque. But he's not a Muslim. And I keep saying this to every conservative I encounter. We know in 2008, we saw the evidence. Obama is not a Muslim. He's a crazy, crazy Christian, because we saw all those Jeremiah Wright videos. However, as luck would have it, just last night, Madonna is coming out and saying, with a profanity-laced tirade, we have a black Muslim in the Oval Office, and isn't that a great thing? So, Greg, I don't know about you, I'm denouncing Madonna as a hate-mongering demagogue who's attacking the President of the United States. But it's very strange. There's this perception out there, and seeing Obama going out and basically saying that slandering the prophet of Islam doesn't belong in our future. That's a very ominous statement. That's a very weird statement. It's a bizarrely pandering statement, and I think there are going to be some real consequences from that, both in domestic politics and in how this is perceived around the world. That was one heck of a foul, bad martini today, Greg.
It was an interesting dichotomy because you talked about at the very beginning, how does Obama reconcile the two statements? There's nothing more important to a free people than the freedom of speech, except about this.
If it doesn't belong in the future, this guy in the YouTube video, he's in hiding. I don't think anybody claims he's going to own the future. Maybe it's part of that winning the future claim that we had from Obama earlier. It's a very bizarre statement that I see all kinds of headaches coming from that.
As we head into our third martini here, we all obviously know that the election is just 6 weeks away, just 42 days. And, Jim, it's a good thing that vote counters across the country aren't threatening to go on strike, because we might need replacement vote counters. And if the replacement referees from the NFL are any indication from the end of the Sunday night game, certainly the end of the Monday night game, which the interception/touchdown drama unfolded in Seattle between the Seahawks and the Packers. If you just needed sheer entertainment or sheer frustration, if one of your teams is involved, the replacement refs are not exactly making Roger Goodell and the NFL look very good right now.
For those who know, they both, you know, it's the last play of the game. The Packers are ahead by about 5 points. They throw the ball down the field, and the receiver and the cornerback both go up for it. It certainly looks like the cornerback has it. His feet come down, and as my understanding of the rules, the play is then over. It is an interception. Once the possession is made and the guy is down, you can't wrestle it out of his hands when it's in the end zone, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And the refs, you know, they have their huddle. One ref says touchdown. One ref says interception. The big scrum, they spend a whole bunch of time reviewing it, and they come up with the conclusion that it's a touchdown. Seattle wins with their day-glow neon, you know, lime green uniforms. Maybe they just blinded the replacement refs with those uniforms, and that's what caused the bad call. For those not familiar, the regular professional NFL referees, who, as we all know, only work, you know, 1 or 2 days a week, are holding out for money and some other issues about how they're reviewed. It's kind of like the Chicago teacher strike, really. And so the NFL went out and found replacement referees. And there's been arguments that the replacement referees aren't as good as the regulars. They're certainly taking longer time to make the calls. This was the nightmare scenario for the NFL, that they'd have a game on national television come down to one call, and for the refs appear to get it wrong. What I can't quite understand is that they got it wrong after the replay. You know, with your naked eye, you're watching live events. It's anybody can make a mistake, but not to get it right on the replay is really baffling. I do think, however, Greg, this is an enormous opportunity here, which Mitt Romney has to come out and say, look, Barack Obama has always stood with the unions. And now the referees union has botched the NFL, our one thing we get to enjoy in fall. People of Wisconsin, I stand with you. I will end this strike, and I will restore what is rightfully belongs to the Green Bay Packers. We're not going to win the state of Washington anyway. Wisconsin, stand with me.
Brilliant.
You know, Paul Ryan would be on board with that. And I understand Reince Priebus tweeted out this morning, replace the refs, replace the president. So you know his priorities. Notice which one comes first.
That's actually not a bad strategy. And in a state like Wisconsin, where the love of the Packers probably trumps the love of a team in just about any other state statewide, that could actually be effective. That could actually be a very effective strategy.
You know, you notice that there were protesters out outside Lambeau Field. And so once again, Greg, we see controversial video images, conflicts over the truth, leading to yet more rounds of violent protests in the Middle West.
Jim, we'll have to leave it there. We've come full circle, clearly. Have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.